Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where frontline sales leaders teach you how to build and scale an outbound sales team. Welcome back to the Predictable Revenue Podcast. I'm your host, Colin Stewart. Today, I'm joined by, we're going to take a little left turn here. We're going to bring a founder on who's he's built a sales team or two himself, though he wasn't always a salesperson. I'd like you to meet Mitch Kupit. Mitch, welcome to the show.
Hey, Colin, it's great to be here. Thanks.
So normally we don't bring, founder CEOs on because we want to get down and dirty and tactical. But today we're talking about how sales is an extension of the product team, not a separate team, which is why I thought who better than somebody who's seen the journey of a product and a sales team all the way from zero to, what'd you do with Code 42? Over 100 million in annual recurring?
Yeah. So by the time I left, we were well over 100 million, and that's in 2016. We started in 2001. Our first product, Crash Plan, launched in 2007. And it was just a rocket ride. Lots of things went up. A few things, a couple, side turns here and there that goes through every startup. If there's anything I can take away is that if you do one thing super right, you can mess up a lot of other things.
Right on. So we're going to talk about product as an extension of the sales team here, because it's one thing I don't know if we've talked about it much on this podcast, but when you look at especially customers or founders trying to get their first 10 customers, people ask, what's your best sales advice? Or who should I hire as a salesperson? And my answer has almost always been, don't hire a salesperson, because closing those first 10 customers is the job of the product team, not the job of a sales team.
Yeah, I agree 100%. There's so much unknown. There's so much variance, and you need to have the ability to do a couple of things. One is your first few sales are actually experiments in your product market thesis. Mm-hmm. You don't know really. You have a guess. And so a salesperson is driven by one thing only, and that's a number. They have to achieve this number. And if you go set them loose and you don't have any guardrails, they'll bring you back all sorts of things.
That's what you pay them to do.
Yeah, that's what you pay them to do, and they're number driven, quota driven. So it's really important for founder CEOs to not outsource that part of the company, the business, too early. And a lot of times I think founders, their tech backgrounds or their product backgrounds, they don't think of themselves as salespeople. Well, you really need to redefine sales for yourself and find an identity in sales for yourself that works. And by the way, if you've raised money, you've sold, right? You sold an idea. You did one of the hardest sales that you can possibly do, which is sell something that doesn't exist.
Yeah, exactly. Because when you think about, we think about giving, when you're trying to package something up to give to a salesperson, you want to know, what are the features? What are the benefits of those features? Who do we build this product for?
Yeah.
Until you have those things nailed, there's really nothing to sell. Like you said earlier, it's just all validation.
Yeah. And the other thing is that you have to have the latitude to adjust roadmaps, adjust your thinking. You might find another opportunity. I guarantee that anybody's coming out of the gate with a product, they're not going to have exact product market fit, even with your first 10 customers, depending on, size of your market and what your market looks like. But it takes a number of customers before you go, hey, you know what? We have a repeatable thing that we can bring salespeople in and then go build a process around it to go hit quotas. That just doesn't happen that way, not in the early stage. My latest venture, I actually brought a sales leader in way too early, and it actually created friction within the organization. And so it had no fault of his. It was actually my doing. And so then I went out and learned a lot more about what our product was actually doing, what the value was, and more importantly, how to talk to the pain points with our customer base and potential customer base. You learn so much by being out there that you can just synthesize quickly, and it doesn't have to go through a translation layer.
Yeah, exactly. Because I remember being a founder CEO, and my back, I've spent the last, before I did that, I was spent 10 years selling, B2B sales. And 5 years of retail before that. And so I had a lot of experience talking to customers and going through that. I think the thing I struggle with was the opposite, was every single customer development interview isn't necessarily one that you should try and close. I found it really hard to reel in that instinct of like, oh, I want to help this person. I feel the opportunity here. Let's close something. it's sort of the, I think most founders have the opposite problem of they're not necessarily don't have that sales background.
Yeah. So, Code42 afforded me a lot of really great experiences. One is that we had a consumer product, then we had an SMB product, and then we had an enterprise product. And so pretty much all of the different segments that you can think of, we were going after, and taught me a big lesson, which is, you know, you really have to know who's going to be a good customer for you. Your cost of getting that customer is so, you know, it's not just about getting the revenue today. It's really about what's the cost of supporting that person. We had a, I'll give you a story. One of the very first customers that we brought on board, they were super excited to have our product. And we ended up doing all sorts of crazy things to make that customer happy because it was early. And nobody else ever benefited from the efforts we put into the product to build it for them. And then you fast forward 5 years. I mean, if you build a successful company, you're going to be in business, not just for the next 3 years, 5, 8, 10, you know, 20 years later, right? So this customer was still around, and there was, by that time, we'd grown from like say it was like 15 people at the time we brought them on board. We were well into the 400s, and there was like maybe like 2 people in the organization that even knew that this customer existed. But these guys would call up, demand support, demand all these things, and nobody knew what was going on. And it was, and yet, you know, we still felt like we had to support the things that were like these one-offs. So yeah. Chasing deals is not a smart strategy in the beginning.
Definitely. I think the, like, I wish I heard that 7 years ago, because that was how we built our first product. We built a great product for Ames Tile and Stone, and everybody, I shouldn't say everybody, but most of the people, you know, bought into it, really loved it. And trying to sell that to other customers, they were like, what is all this random stuff?
Right. Right.
And then all the things that you've done now have created all this technical debt for everything you're trying to build on top of it.
Yes. In your experience of starting the second thing or going at this a second time around, I have to imagine that you've gotten really good at disqualifications.
I've gotten better. I can't say I did a supremely amazing job the second time around, but I think I learned a lot and I got better at saying no and understanding, sort of differentiating between, yes, we should try and close this person on, they'd be a good fit for sort of the pilot, and no, this person is not somebody that we want to bring on board.
Yeah, I just had a conversation with a startup today, actually. So I do a lot of early startup work here. And so what I hear a lot is like people, when they have their idea and then they start getting like excitement around it, this person is having conversations like, I think, 5 Fortune 500 companies. They're super excited about the idea. And then they say this thing where they go, you know what? I can't wait to deploy this to my 4,000 person sales team. Yeah. And, you know, we're going to be super excited to get this out there when you're ready. And that's the big thing, is that when you're ready. And I think a lot of folks, you know, they end up selling the idea versus the product. Mm-hmm. Having a product and actually having it fulfill on the promises and the expectations of it, that's where a lot of companies go wrong. And I think, you know, in the early stage, you have to know what you can actually deliver on. And a salesperson won't know that if you try to bring them on too early. Mm-hmm. They will simply go off of, hey, you said you could do this. And hey, I've heard you talk about like roadmaps in our casual conversations. And as a founder CEO, I can tell you like the things I say are not what the product does today. You know, I'm exactly. Talking about V2, V3, V4, and I got like 3 years queued up in my brain. But most people don't hear that. What they hear is, oh, the product is amazing. I could sell that right now. And they go do that.
Mm-hmm. Which is not what we want to do.
No. I think that's a really important lesson, is being able to compartmentalize. Just setting expectations up front. The advice I gave to the person today was, hey, you know, you need to really have a hard conversation right away. First of all, like you're like 2 people. Why is this Fortune 500 company going to even work with you? Do they even work with companies like you? So send them the disqualification, like say for a startup founder, it's really simple. Like, hey, do you work with companies my size? Mm-hmm. Give me an example of a company my size that you've worked with and has had success. If they can't do those things, you know, then you're just having a really great conversation, makes it feel good, but it's probably not going to go anywhere.
Yeah, there's an unsavory term that I don't want to share on this podcast, but yes.
Kicking tires.
It's a solo activity.
Yes.
It's not very productive at all.
No. It's if you want to feel good and have vanity, knock yourself out. But if you want to actually make money, run away from those things as fast as you can.
So we got a bunch of salespeople listening. Let's assume, you know, maybe their companies are a little bit beyond that. But I know as salespeople, we get this market feedback all the time. In your experience, what's been the best way to receive that feedback as one of the founding members?
Yeah. So one of the things I had always wished I was able to do was listen to all this, you know, sales conversation with customers, mm-hmm. as opposed to, because I think salespeople, rightfully, they want to close their deals and they'll use whatever technique they have available to them. And one of them might be you have the ear of the head of product, you have the ear of a CTO, you have the ear of the CEO, and you got a big, you know, say multi-million dollar deal in front of you, and you say, hey, I think we can close this if we do XYZ feature sets. Ever heard that one before? Or ever said that one?
No, absolutely not. Mitch, never.
That doesn't exist. That was just in my experience. That was an isolated experience.
I'd call our CTO and be like, dude, you need to build this feature before the demo, which is Monday morning. And he's like, dude, it's Saturday. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah. So my favorite one was I would get those calls because I've held the role of CTO in the past and head of product. And I would get the call saying, hey, just get it so I can walk on the rocks. If you show me where the rocks are, I can walk on water. It doesn't have to be perfect.
Yeah.
Just put it in there. They try to downplay it, you know.
Yeah, it's everything is on rails. And if you go off track even a little bit, you're toast.
Yeah. So what we ended up doing is, the idea is if you can like really bring product, market, and sales together in a cohesive fashion. And sales is a great, great data source. I mean, like you talk about, especially if you're doing a B2B business, I mean, you aren't going to learn more. Marketing will tell you all sorts of things that they're getting from like clicks and traffic. But the real test of the experiment is, did you get paid?
Exactly. It's not a customer if they don't give you money.
No. I don't know how many times I've heard, oh, they love it. Did they pay us? No. Then it doesn't matter. So what I like to always think when I think about like products and sales is that the product is the experiment. It's the hypothesis of what has value in a market. The market side of the equation is like, who's this for? How big is the opportunity? And then sales conducts the experiment. And then if you can tie all those things back together and like use the sales results, use the sales feedback to inform both product and marketing, you'll probably have, even if you don't have the hit right out of the gate, you'll learn fast and, you know, get yourself on your way to product market fit.
I love that. And I think just to clarify, I think it almost sounds like it conflicts with our earlier point about, you know, the first 10 customers are really the product. Or it's closing those first 10 is the role of the product manager. But really you're talking about once you've gone through those and closed those first 10, right?
Yeah. So I actually would say that it's completely supportive, but because that communication loop has to be so tight, it should really exist in one person's head at that point. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Because that one person can think of, okay, market opportunity, experiment, I got a result. Okay. What did I learn? And they can do that really fast. And the reason that someone's a founding CEO is because hopefully they have that ability anyways. Right. And so they synthesize it, they figure out what works, they learn, they adapt, and now they can start honing it in where it's, all right, we can start fixing some of these messaging, we can start fixing some of the positioning, we can deposition competition this way. If say one of your competitors comes in and says, hey, they do X, Y, and Z, and you say, that doesn't matter. For these type of customers, what they really value is this thing. So if they try to throw that out there, we'll set this landmine for them.
Perfect. I like the way you think about that. If we drill in on what's the goal of the product manager?
To build something that can get into market that has value and people pay for. I mean, if they do their job right, they'll have listened to the customer and they'll have found the pain points and they'll know how to get the product to sell itself.
Gotcha.
And the salesperson's job is really to talk to the pain points, find customers that have these pain points, line them up so if they don't have it today, maybe they have it tomorrow, and then get them through, educate them, and show them why this is the best solution for their pain. I think of salespeople simply as demonstrators. I mean, they're really educators or teachers, and they look out for potential students, and they show them the right way, that's kind of how the best salespeople that I've worked with come off as. Mm-hmm. Like, wow, I didn't even realize I was being sold to. I just felt like I was learning something.
Yeah. I love the way you think about that, is making sure the product sells itself. Because I think anybody that's working for a tech, not like a tech company, a new company, a young company, you're taking some risk as a salesperson, right? You're working for a company that's smaller, that, you know, you're not going to, might not get the coaching you would in a big organization. You might not be making the big salary that you would if you were at one of those really large tech companies. But I think that's the trade-off, is you get the opportunity for growth, right?
Right.
You've got this brand new product in the market that's, and that's sort of the goal, is you've got something that's should be really easy to sort of rip and replace, either rip and replace competitors, or there are no competitors and you've got these sort of greenfield opportunities. But I think that's why we as salespeople want to work for startups, is because there's nothing better than that wide open greenfield, or maybe you know, a field that's filled with your competitors that are super easy to rip and replace, because that feels pretty good too.
Yeah, right. Right. I do have a few, if we're going to just kind of jump into some tips for sales folks thinking about joining a startup, maybe being the salesperson number one, salesperson, you know, you're the first sales leader. I really do think it's important that the CEO founder, A, they can sell the company to you, and B, they've already sold the product a handful of times and they have stories to talk to. Like if the CEO founder can't say things like, hey, you know what, in this one case, we were selling to XYZ customer, we learned all these things, we've actually disqualified them because we knew that they wouldn't be a good fit for us down the road. We would get there, but we weren't there now. Those are great things to hear. Mm-hmm. If a CEO founder is basically just saying yes, 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 well, guess what? They actually don't know what the product does for people that is of value, and they're really leaning on you to go figure that out. And the worst case scenario is if they want you to go figure this out, but they're not actually going to let you go figure it out, meaning that they like to micromanage. They still think of themselves as a CEO. That's, you know, I'm the one that knows everything, and you're just somebody who's going to go sell and make me money. Mm-hmm. That's a terrible fit.
Yeah. Because basically they're hiring you to... One, you can't really outsource the validation of your product. I mean, you can, but that's probably maybe not the best thing to do with a salesperson.
Yeah. And as I said, I mean, if you just find that, you know, you see the opportunity, like, there's a lot of entrepreneurial salespeople, right? I mean, to be a salesperson, you have to be entrepreneurial. Mm-hmm. You build out your patch, you build a territory, you start from scratch. I mean, that's a super, super common theme. You got this thing, you just have to figure out how to get into a certain market. Just make sure that you know, you have the hard conversation with the founder CEO that, hey, you know, if this is what you really want me to do, that you know, the communication lines are open, that you have the latitude to do these things, because worst thing you do is set yourself up to fail.
Mm-hmm. And not have somebody that's listening, you're bringing all this market feedback to, right?
Right, right. You could, you know, I think where this is the most dangerous, when there's big tech hype cycles like there are right now. AI companies, blockchain companies, you know, scooter companies. there's a lot of hype right now. And these things are going to lead to transformative change. But I think it's important to understand, what value are you is this company trying to bring into the market? Is it replacement value, or is it transformative value? If it's just, and what I mean by that is that replacement value is, they're looking at the market and they see that they could be the better, they could be the better mousetrap because of these reasons. And then all I have to do is go, you know, because it's next generation, you know, there's a lot of old legacy systems out there. Let's go rip and replace these guys. We can do it for cheaper because our costs are lower, et cetera. And these are things that make sense to anybody who has studied business. If you want, that's a great place to start with a startup. Make sure they have a solid business. Make sure they have it makes sense just on the numbers. Mm-hmm. Transformative value stuff is like, we're doing something in AI and it's going to completely disrupt X. And if that's all they got, like, you know, that's pretty hard to come in and be a salesperson for that.
Yes. Unless you've gotten to the stage of we're currently disrupting and this is the application.
Right, right. Yeah. In the context of startups.
For sure. Because in the first case, the market is there.
Yes.
Right. The customers are already there, but they're just using something else. So mm-hmm. what would be a great example of this, you know, historically?
Oh boy. So I think, you know, so if we're talking about like B2B companies, I think you know, like Box is a good example. It really forced Microsoft to kind of get off their butts and do like OneDrive. Mm-hmm. But you know, people were sharing files, but it just sucked.
Yeah.
It was just terrible. But then, you know, Box comes along in the age of like cloud. They make it easy. They still wanted to, you know, we can still adhere to all of the, you know, compliance and security needs of large enterprise companies. But, you know what, the end users love this. Mm-hmm. And that for me was like, you know, I saw Box and I was like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. You know, totally. People are sharing files right now, but it sucks. It's on a file server. It's on-prem or something like that.
It's stuck in SharePoint.
Right. Worse, all of it's an email, right? All of it was an email.
Oh, man. Yeah. That was like anyway, let's not go. I won't go there.
Yeah.
But basically what they're doing is there's a behavior. There's something that already existed, right?
Yeah.
People are already sharing files. The new trend is the cloud. You take something that already exists. You bring it into the cloud. That's your sort of innovative 10X company.
Right, right. They're utilizing the tech to 10X an existing market problem.
And so talk to me about, can you talk to me about transformative companies? So these are companies that are bringing AI to AI, blockchain, you know, maybe 10 years ago, what was a transformative company?
Oh, a cloud infrastructure company, easy. You know, I remember so many companies saying that nobody will ever adopt it. Privacy matters. I was among the crowd that just said those things because I was doing a lot of on-prem big enterprise backup and recovery solutions. Mm-hmm. And you know, everything we saw was like they loved the fact that we actually worked both on-prem and had a cloud solution. Mm-hmm. But the trend was clearly things were moving to the cloud. And that's, you know, as a kind of future-looking opportunist, you want to see where those early trends are moving. It may not be right now, though. You know, there might be a lot of opportunity to keep improving what the status quo is. The other thing is that the tech cycles are getting faster. You know, it used to be like a 20-year cycle, then it turns into a 10-year cycle. I think we're edging closer to like 5-year cycles now. So,
and you say cycle as in founding the company to IPO exit or disrupting or?
Oh, all of the above, because they're all functions of each other.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so the big transformative company that stepped in there, AWS, Google Cloud.
Yeah.
Microsoft eventually caught on.
And even then, it's like, I think there were a lot of pioneering companies that then became part of these larger plays.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Herokus of the world.
That's right. Yeah.
Salesforce. I mean, if you can't forget Salesforce. No, people were just like, I mean, when that first came up, you were like, there's no way I'm putting all my sales data in the cloud.
It was the exact same conversation. And ironically, now they bought Heroku, right?
Yeah. We write Salesforce two bills, one for sales and one for our platform. We run on top of Heroku today. Yeah.
Yeah. Again, different podcast, maybe.
Yeah. Sorry.
So that's cool. So if we're talking about salespeople that are looking to join one of these companies, you know, they're looking at this transformative company, you know, any good founder can sell that dream. How does somebody go about validating?
Yeah. So I would just go to anybody that you think, you know, if the company can't articulate who they're targeting and why they would be buying, that's a warning flag, you know, right? And then if the company can't, and then if they do actually articulate it, then just do your homework. You know, go test it.
Yeah.
Go talk to who you think you would sell it to and see what they think. And if it's feeling like a pretty hard story to tell, you know, you're doing a lot of kind of hand waving, that's probably a warning sign.
Yeah.
You know, I was just going to jump in. It's like, you know, if you can't get it down to one sentence, if you actually have to tell a story for people to understand the pain point that you're trying to solve, regardless of it, whatever the product is and the market, you know, the company's trying to sell, I think that's, you know, that's more of an indicator of a winner, but they have it down to that, you know, just one single statement.
I always find it funny that salespeople, so yes, I agree. You need to really be able to distill down that big chunky value proposition into one line, one sentence that a human can understand. And if there's a ton of, you know, 5-syllable words in there, it's going to be challenging. I always find it funny that, you know, when we hire, we check references, right? You say you were a top performer at each of the companies you were at. Great. I'm going to call your bosses, make intros for them or for me to them. And I want to check them out. But I don't think I've ever had a salesperson check my references, right? So, hey, we say we've got, you know, these great customers and they love the, you know, the value prop and blah, 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 blah. How many that come in have read your case studies or have asked us to talk to a customer? Yeah. Or have gone and done that research, right? It's, you know, I haven't been looking for a sales job in a long time, you know, but I think if I was in that position, that's probably the first thing that I would do, you know, if a company was considering bringing me on, because this is going to be your life. You're going to be selling this product. And if it's not an easy product to sell, if these customers are not crazy happy about, you know, if the solution went away tomorrow, would they be, or would they be the hair on fire and crying? You know, I think a really great indication is they're going to be very upset if the product went away tomorrow.
Yeah. Another way to put that is, does the company get support tickets? If they're not doing support, they're not getting a product in the market. And so the reason I say that is because if you really have something that people care about and they're using it as part of their day-to-day process, or it's a critical, if that product fails to work, which all products fail to do, mm-hmm. all products, you know, fail at some point. You know?
Everything breaks. Yeah.
Yeah. Everything breaks. But someone has to care enough to write in.
Exactly. That's a really good, idea, Mitch, because I remember what it was like in the early days here. Nobody was using the product. It's like, that's a really good indicator. We're not getting any support tickets because, you know, they might be paying their monthly bill, but they just don't care enough to actually invest the time. Whereas
right.
when we got onto that path and we were doing it right, people were not just complaining, but they were adamantly emailing me like, man, you've got to build this feature because
right.
this. They're advocating like, hey, if you don't build this, like, this is such a huge opportunity. Like, why aren't you doing this? And they're worked up and they're angry because your product doesn't have this feature that they can tell it's going in that direction, but it's just not quite there yet.
Oh,
and
man.
They're pissed off that you're not there.
Yeah. Yeah. They care.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, you know, that's the start that's a signal that you have something.
Angry, satisfied customers. They're happy that you exist, but they're pissed off that you aren't 5 years older and have a more fleshed out solution because it's so central to their workforce or workflow. Oh,
I love it. I love it. That's great. That's perfect. Angry, satisfied customers. they're angry enough to actually write in and they care enough about your product because it's adding value. That's how you know. Mm-hmm.
I remember somebody once told me when I was, cause I had to learn product. I was pretty garbage at product management. I still am. But my buddy Kareem explained it to me like, you know, you want to think about a customer that imagine their hair is on fire mm-hmm. and your product is a brick and they're going to pick up that brick and they're going to use that to put their hair out because that's the only thing that's available to them. Your product sucks as a brick at putting out the fire on their hair, but it's the only thing that's available.
So they slam their heads with bricks.
If you think about the analogy, that's kind of what's, you know, most early that's products start out as, right?
Yeah, yeah. So I'm going to riff off that with the support thing. Look, you know, I think sometimes, especially as companies get bigger and, you know, they just have to specialize in roles. I mean, even sales is broken out into all these specialized teams that do, like, say, maybe demand gen. You got a top funnel team, you got a middle funnel team. You got the closers, you got the, you know, people are bringing the leads in. But you just have to, I like to just take a step back and remember, look, it all circulates around a customer. And so whether or not you are, you know, getting in front of people, telling them about all these, making these promises about these pain points you're going to solve, then delivering on that promise, it's really coming back and understanding that you're building a relationship around trust. That whether or not you solve the problem today, that you're going to solve it for them eventually in the time frame that you set. And support is just an equal part of this equation in great sales. Another way to put it is that, like, I don't want to sell the best product on the planet. The support behind it sucks. I don't know how many times you get, just this person, they can sell anything to the moon, but then they leave a company. You ask, why did you leave? The product was good, but, you know, it's not perfect. And the support just sucked. And my customers started hating. They loved me, but they hated the company. Mm-hmm. And so another good test for startups is just how, if you're a salesperson, is just really get an understanding like how good, you know, the existing customers, you know, what's the reputation of the company for support? Does the company have a great brand? You know, because that's going to be the long lasting effect. And for salespeople too, they know that the long game is about building as many great relationships as they can.
Mm-hmm. I've always thought of support as part of the product.
Yes.
You know, because it's not just about the software. It's not just about the server that it sits on. You could argue the server is totally irrelevant. The software is less so. It's about what you're helping the customer accomplish. And if they don't know how to use it or set it up or configure it or get that value out of that piece of software, then it doesn't really matter if the software is there or not, right? It's about the, they don't really care about the software or what it looks like or, you know, how it feels when you use it. The people buy because they're solving a problem. They're getting a certain business value. And that's really at the end of the day, what they care about. They're going to do this process because it's going to help them achieve X, Y, Z and hit their KPIs and get their bonus and grow their company and, you know, all that sort of stuff. But if they can't get that because your support is non-existent or the product is impossible to set up, then it doesn't matter how great the software is.
Right. Yeah. And I think that there's a little bit about the modern day organization where they've split off this thing called success, which is all about the onboarding and the delivery, maybe some upsell farming. I think it's important to rewind a few years before there was the, you know, customer success team, right? Who did that before?
Salespeople.
Salespeople did it because they wanted to close the deal. And so salespeople oftentimes are the best support people. In fact, I remember
our paychecks rely on it, man.
Yeah. Until you close the deal and then like, you're okay, I got the money. But the best ones, they still cared. And I remember seeing sales team members coming over into support and say, hey, you know what, make sure you treat my customer. Like they would, you know, like spit the support team members for their customers. And they would say like, hey, you know, and they would like take support team members out to lunches. If this, you know, request comes in from this customer, just treat it extra special.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And it was interesting to watch and see how that was working because salespeople, they cared. They knew that they would have an opportunity to sell back into that and they wanted that customer treated right.
100%. You know, it was a totally different world, but the last job I had where I was selling hard goods was basically I was selling diesel generators or renting diesel generators and selling specialty welding equipment. And like, you know, I had the company truck and, you know, top rep in BC, and I say top rep because that's the only rep in BC.
It still counts.
Counts, man. Counts. Top of the leaderboard every month.
Yeah, every day.
Amazing. But whenever I had a big customer order come in, I knew like it's so much more work for the guys in the back. And so you always got to make sure you're bringing them coffee and donuts, and making them out for lunch, because you got to show them that you care. Like, hey, this one's special, right? And, you know, it means a lot to me. So I want to make sure it means a lot to you. And I just want to say, you know, thanks for, you know, doing all this extra work, because it's sort of your job as the salespeople, as salesperson or sales team, to make sure that you're the second half of the company is busy and slammed and broken because you've closed so many customers.
Yeah. I think that's a great point. I can't support that enough, which is the folks that I saw that really went the furthest inside our organization were the ones that really understood that it took a team to close a customer, keep a customer, and no matter where you were in the organization, they were constantly trying to build great relationships within the organization because they knew that that would help them succeed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those people go on to be just, you know, great, you know, if you're ever thinking about starting your own business, the sales skill is probably the number one skill, just point blank. It doesn't matter if you have great ideas, if you can't sell them, it doesn't matter, right? Mm-hmm. You can sell ideas without building them. You know, that happens. I think you got a great story there.
Yeah, basically. We didn't have any engineers, and we closed our first customer and hand shook on a deal. And
that's so awesome.
Engineer I'd been having beers with, I called him up. I was like, "Hey, Adam, remember that company you were talking about starting?" He's like, "Yeah." I'm like, "It has its first paying customer. If you can bring a demo, you know, build the demo and get up and running for like," and then I think we gave him like 2 weeks or something. He's like, oh, I think we can do that. And that's how the company, that's how we got started.
Yeah. I love that story too, because it really talks to, I think one of the advantages that founders who have sales in their background, they drive harder because they're not limited by the how, they're driven by the value. Like, we get this and we do it in this time frame, there's a big reward at the end of it. So let's get going.
Exactly.
And I love that mindset.
It's the empathy for the customer, right? You understand that, you know, without your solution, your potential customers are suffering because of XYZ, right? And like you said, if you've built a product that sells itself, it's because there's a tremendous amount of pain out there. So you're doing the world a disservice if you're slacking off and sitting on your thumbs and, you know, not getting out there and hustling, because there are all these people in pain. You're effectively a superhero.
Yeah. Yeah. Really. I mean, exactly. It's like, imagine all these people with broken legs and then you show up with crutches.
That's exactly it. Exactly it. Mitch, I really want to thank you for your time. I've got one last question / our surprise segment. I told you I'd give you there'd be an opportunity, because you've got something new since Code 42 and your $100 million ARR success. I don't know why you're not just on a beach.
I love doing this.
That's fair, man. I'd probably be doing the same. I told you I'd give you a chance to sort of share what you're doing. And so we've got our surprise segment. It's called Ring Ring, Cold Call Me. So
okay.
I'm going to say ring ring and then answer the phone. And then you've got to cold call me and I'm going to throw objections at you.
Oh, awesome. Great.
I might hang up on you if you're, you know, not handling those. So let's, you ready for it?
All right, let's do it.
Cool. Ring ring. Hey, this is Colin.
Hey, Colin, this is Mitch. Hey, remember when we met at that event last week and you said you were interested in hearing more about Ramble?
Nope. Click.
I was trying to do the power play.
Let's go cold. You haven't met me yet.
Oh, full cold. Okay. Oh, no more. On, no Mitch. Warm. All right.
I'm not letting you off easy. This is the fun part for me.
Okay. All right.
Ring, ring. Hello.
Hey, Colin, wondering if I could get just 5 minutes of your time. Knowing you're in sales, I think I got something that could help your team hit their number this quarter.
5 minutes is a lot of time, Mitch. I'm a busy guy.
Okay,
you got 30 seconds.
30 seconds, fantastic. How are you guys doing on your lead conversion right now?
We're doing pretty good. We got four guys, they're all hitting their targets.
All right, phone call is an important part of your process?
Absolutely.
All right, what if I could tell you that there's something out there that could help you make better phone calls and get higher quality conversions? Is that interesting?
Definitely interesting. How are you going to make my team do better phone calls, make better phone calls?
All right. Well, first question I have is, how do you currently measure your phone calls?
We measure the output of the whole process.
And is that an efficient process for you? Do you actually know how the sales calls are going, or are you relying on your team to just tell you?
Yeah, we do weekly reviews of calls. And we do some recording.
Okay. But you don't know all the calls and you kind of rely on your team. And then when you're bringing on new team members, are you hiring new team members this year?
Mm-hmm.
Right now. Do they train by shadowing your other reps?
They do.
Oh, so that's costing you a little bit of money there, isn't it?
Possibly, yeah.
Yeah. So what if I told you that we could eliminate that too?
You're going to eliminate the ramp up for a new rep?
We're going to eliminate the need to shadow.
How do you do that?
First of all your calls will be recorded by a phone system that we have as a product called Ramble. They're transcribed, and then more importantly, the backend system can analyze it for the qualifications that you prescribe so that you are effectively on every single call. And more importantly, your other reps can now go to Ramble to learn about the best calls without having to go to another rep.
Sounds interesting. Let's find some time next week. Cool.
Great.
Call out to the audience here. I'd love your feedback on Mitch's cold call. And was I too nice to him? Should I have thrown him more objections or was I a little bit too mean?
Can I provide my own feedback?
Yeah.
You were way too nice. That was a pretty easy cold call. And I think as I was going through it, I would have probably hung up if I didn't have a real pain point.
That's fair. That's fair, Mitch. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. I definitely enjoyed it. And check out Ramble if you're looking for that sort of sales phone system.
All right. Hey, thanks, Colin.
Hey, thanks, Mitch.
Bye-bye.